Welcome, everyone, to Talia Tuesday on the Blueprint Podcast, where we dive deep into the realms of confidence and assertiveness with our co-host, Talia Bombola. As a licensed marriage and family therapist and specialist in confidence and assertiveness, Talia brings a wealth of expertise and insights to our discussions. Join us each Tuesday as we explore practical strategies, personal anecdotes, and empowering advice to help you cultivate the confidence and assertiveness you need to thrive in all aspects of life. Get ready to unlock your full potential and build the life you desire with Talia and Jason as your guides. Talia, welcome back for another Talia Tuesday on the Blueprint Podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. We are happy to be here.
We are always happy to be here. So the question comes from Instagram today, which is, how do you explain anxious attachers that come from ultra loving homes? I'm super anxious attachment, but my whole life has been a life of family love. It's very confusing.
This is also known as enmeshment. So when your family is, okay, it's not always enmeshment. Let me correct myself. Oftentimes when families, when it's like the companies that like describe themselves as like, when you're working here, it's like a family. It's like, run, that is so toxic. Like if you come from an ultra loving home, sometimes there are poor boundaries. There's enmeshment. There's not a lot of individuation or separation from the family unit, which makes getting other like jobs, moving out, dating, like other adult milestones hard to obtain or to even want to work towards, because you don't want to break out of the ultra loving family unit. Not that you necessarily think they wouldn't love you if you did, but you're like, I'm never going to find it as good elsewhere. Why would I leave? Kind of a thought process. So when you're growing up with an ultra loving home and it's not enmeshment, it's not unhealthy. It just sets like a really good example. The rare ones who like their parents are securely attached and never really scream fight, but they do have disagreements, but they repair, like they followed all the books that you and I talk about for people to read. And you do come from an ultra loving home in terms of like, they set a healthy template. It can create an anxious attachment when you're going out and dating, because if you look at the dating pool, yes, majority of people are securely attached. However, they have partnered with each other and self-selected out of the dating pool. So there's not a lot of other secure people left to date, because once they find somebody secure, often they like stick with them for a long time. That's the benefit of secure attachment, whether you had it or had to earn it. So you might be anxiously attached because you're interacting with people who are not healthy themselves, do not love themselves, and they may come off as avoidant, or they just have their own stuff going on that they can't be there for you as much as your healthy, ultra-loving family can. So it creates anxiety in you, because it's like, well, why are you not there for me? Why aren't you texting me back? Why aren't you this? Like, it really, your attachment style is fluid. It depends on who you're partnered with. You could be very secure and date someone who's anxious, and then not that you'd necessarily be anxious, but you would tend more towards being overly explanatory. You could be secure, date someone who's avoidant, doesn't usually last long, and be like, yeah, I'm over this. You could be avoidant and be with somebody avoidant that usually doesn't pair well. Like, because it's fluid coming from that ultra loving home, you might be feeling anxious because no other love is going to meet the requirement that your parents have, good in a good way, set for you. So you're like, oh, this isn't enough. Like, they're giving me the bare minimum. I want more. And you're feeling anxious because there's that gap between what you're wanting and what you're getting. I think that can be part of it too, on one hand. And then on the other hand, the enmeshment can cause anxious attachment, because it's like, oh no, we all love each other. We like talk all the time. We're always close. We're this and that. And it's like, that's a little too close.
Yeah. Well, it makes it really hard to have that inner sense of self. You almost miss that throughout your life, because you're so, your life is so intertwined, and your thoughts, feelings, and emotions are so intertwined and interconnected with everybody else around you, that you end up being that adult later in life where you're out on your own and you're struggling to hit some of these milestones. It can actually lead to a failure to launch in the long term, because you never learned who you are, where you're going, what you're doing, or why you're doing it. You don't even know to ask yourself questions like, what do I want? Mm-hmm. And then be able to answer that fully.
Mm-hmm. And to separate and individuate kind of goes against the enmeshed family credo, if you will, because it's like, we kind of need you. You're like the linchpin of the family. We kind of need you to be here, because a lot of parents in enmeshed family systems triangulate multiple or at least one child to be like the golden child of the family. And it's usually one parent in triangulation. It's one parent who confides in the child inappropriately. So do with that information operationally, define it how you will. They confide or partner, collude with the child to an inappropriate level where the other parent should really be that person, the emotional support, the what have you, but the parent is not getting it from the other parent, so they go to the child. And so for children who are like parentified, adultified, or the chosen child for the enmeshment triangle, it's more difficult for them to break out and to individuate because they feel like they're betraying their family system by like basically breaking up with their parent to go find themselves or find another partner because they have so much emotional labor. We call it emotional incest in therapy. Not every family goes through that has enmeshment, but a lot of families do, that they have very poor boundaries, a very diffuse boundaries. There's not a lot of rigid boundaries or boundaries at all, really. And it creates an anxious attachment also because you're like searching for that over love, but most healthy adult romantic relationship is conditional in a good way. And there's boundaries to it. It's not the same level of love that a family loves each other in terms of the typical like unconditional love that you get from blood relatives or family, if it's healthy, I want to say, like generally, that's different than the adult conditional love where it's like, I don't have to be with you. I'm here because I want to be.
What does it mean to be conditional in a good way?
I think conditional in a good way means that you as an individual self have boundaries of what is okay and not okay with you. Whenever I do dating coaching, I have people answer a list of like 12 to 15 questions. And on that list is, what do you want? Some of them are like, what do you want to give and what do you want to get, put loosely? Because in a relationship, when you're in an adult romantic relationship with conditions, I'm not going to love you if you cheat on me. I'm not going to love you if you abuse me, if you hurt me, if you betray me. Like, there's conditions to the love. Like, my love is limitless when you're within the fence, right? The fence is the parameters and the boundaries. And if we're both playing in that fence, this is a vast field that we can love each other endlessly. But it's going to come to an end if either one of us cross those boundaries. So that's why I say it's conditional in a good way, because you don't want to. This is where like family systems can become not a good template for adult romantic relationships if we're tending towards unhealthy people, because it's like, well, you love your family, you stick it out no matter what, you're always there for the person. Like, true to an extent, but that's much different when it's the parent doing that with the child who's, let's say, I worked with a lot of troubled teens. Like, their love should not be conditional. Their love should be unconditional, so that child learns, oh, I'm not a bad or wrong person. I want to fit in with my family. I want to get better. They're doing this to help me. They're not doing this because they hate me. Like, that needs to be worked through, separate from when you're in an adult relationship and this person continues to mistreat you or is doing drugs and they're not seeking treatment or what have you. Like, put a condition on that of like, if this happens again, I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying if you choose to do it, this is what my choice is going to be in response. That's like a healthy boundary. That's kind of like an ultimatum, but not really, because you actually have to follow through on it.
Yeah. I mean, you're just settling into your goals, your values, and your standards for a relationship with you, and saying that you acknowledge and you are able to go within yourself and know that this is not okay. And so if this continues, I can't continue to be a part of this.
Yeah. If you're going to include that behavior in your life, you're going to choose to not include me because my choice is going to be to exit this dynamic. And if you follow through on that, that's good on you and healthy for that person to learn like, oh, I can't just do whatever I want and still have people interact with me. And I think a lot of people in the world don't have people who are willing to walk away to show them like, this is not acceptable behavior. And that's not the point of the person walking away. We can look at this in enmeshed family systems. I'm not walking away from an enmeshed family because I don't love you. In fact, I'm walking away because I do love you, but now I love myself even more than
I'm walking away because I love me.
Yes, I have to individuate and I can't stay part of this unhealthy family system. And that doesn't mean you don't stay part of your family. For some families, you do have to separate and you can't go back. But for some, there's a reconciliation period when the individuation or the adult who's individuating leaves. And then they have to come back and re-navigate the roles and the boundaries with their family system and whoever may still be enmeshed from, if you have multiple siblings and, you know, one of them hasn't moved out or some of them haven't moved out or whatever else, some of them are still enmeshed and you're the chosen one in the other way that left the ultra loving home. It's still going to be ultra loving, but there's conditions on it now because you're not doing it out of like, oh, well, I have to stay because what's going to happen to my parents if I leave? That's super inappropriate. And that's not okay for a child to have. I worked with a lot of adults that are like, but what if I move out and my parents, like, they're going to have to interact with each other without me there. I'm like,
yeah.
That's kind of where, and they're like, but they're going to fight. And I'm like, it's not your responsibility. So we get conditioned sometimes with those ultra loving homes that it's like a little too much enmeshment.
Yeah. How can you explain the resistance that pops up when you tell someone who's had those experiences that they do have to learn to put themselves first above everything else that's going on?
I think the resistance comes from a feeling of wanting to avoid betrayal of family or betrayal of self in a way, like in a weird dichotomous way. It's this, both at the same time. And in part, working not against it, but working through the resistance with small acts of individuation and small acts of like self-reclamation, I think is the best way to move through it, because it does bring up a lot of uncomfortable emotions that you may not have felt, or you may have felt, but your family being ultra loving as they are, like inadvertently, indirectly told you to like shove them down, because it's like, oh no, you're catching on to like the family curse. Like, let's not go down that pathway. And then they're like, no, don't worry about it. We're this and that. And you're like, okay, I just want to open that door. La, 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 let me go over here. When you individuate and you get out of that family system before the like reconciliation and the roles look different, working on yourself and working on your own goals might be selfish. And you also honestly may get called selfish by your family of like, well, this isn't how we raised you. And it's like, that's the fucking point. Like, yeah. I didn't like how I was raised in these ways. I may have liked it in other ways, but I don't like that this is unhealthy or enmeshed, or I had to keep secrets or be your confidant, mom, dad, whoever. Like, that wasn't healthy either. And you're right. This is not how you raised me. Thank God I learned and somebody else taught me how to be instead of the way I was raised. And thank God I questioned it, because otherwise I would have just been stuck and I would have never grown. So I think that's part of it too, is like, that's the point. Like, this isn't how we
cycle.
That's the point.
If you don't catch on to it and you don't start moving down the road of healing, you will absolutely repeat that cycle and it'll 100%. Just continue.
For generations. If it goes unexamined, it can go through a family system for decades.
And it's so interesting to me, because you'll hear people talk about it. They recognize it. They see it. They can acknowledge it. But then they don't do any work towards healing.
They're afraid, because it would cost them the only love they've ever known. Yeah. So if you think about the love that comes from a family, if that is all you've ever experienced love-wise, not that you've never dated or had friends, like there's difference of platonic love versus familial love versus romantic love, obvious, hopefully, fingers crossed, hopefully that's all separate.
Please, all separate, guys.
Yeah, or like maybe only two overlap, and it's definitely not romantic and family. If that is the only love you ever experienced, a going against behavior, but a moving towards behavior is what I call it at the same time, like individuation is going against the family, but moving towards yourself. When you do that, you feel the threat and the cutoff, or a threat of a cutoff of that only love you've ever known. Conversely, that's also why leaving a romantic relationship, if it's the first one or the most intense one, Sheryl Crow was right, the first cut is the deepest. It's usually the most difficult, because you're like, oh my God, whether attachment styles are in play or not, like, what if I never find this again? That comes from the core part of humans that we like to stay connected and loved. Like, everybody as a human species wants that. There are some that don't. That's more like personality, affect, etc. Like, things went haywire. But generally, as a human species, we all do want to feel loved and connected. It will look different person to person. So if the threat of I'm leaving this family system, I know, right? We're in contemplation, or pre-contemplation is when you don't think anything's wrong and you're like, my family's totally normal. Contemplation's like, oh, like maybe they are a little off. And then preparation in this case would be like, they are not normal. I do need to make these changes for myself. And then you move into like action, maintenance, like the stages of change model. If you apply it to leaving an enmeshed family system, a lot of people are in pre-contemplation or contemplation for a very long time before they're ever in preparation or action. And it's usually the hope or promise of love from another that's enough to flip the switch, because this person is an adult and to an adult, right? Let's say it's you and me dating, an adult to an adult, I'm coming to you and you're like, hey, Tali, your family's kind of unhealthy. I really want to be with you, but you're going to have to put boundaries up with them. And I'm like, I really want you and I really want to stay with them. And the best way to have both is boundaries. So that's where it comes up too, is like, it would be unhealthy if you're asking me to cut off my family to be with you. That's toxic. But if you're saying, I do want to be with you, it would make it even easier to be with you if we set these limits and I'll have your back on that, right? That's different, because then I can feel safe to leave my nest
and fly the coop with you, and then we create our own nest together. So now I have two nests, but that leap from, it's like the hermit crab going from one shell to the next one. I always talk about that with my clients. That's like the most vulnerable run of their life. Like, you have to have some protective barriers on that. So I think that's part of it too, is what protection can you put in place, having a therapist, having friends, having, you know, whoever can help you individuate to not go back to an unhealthy family system, or I guess to say, don't return unless you can interact with them in a healthy way. And this is no shade to this person's ultra loving family. They very well may be the super healthy one that set a really high standard. Honestly, good for your parents. Like, don't settle for less, but you might be anxious because they loved you so well, and they loved you in a way that only parents can love you. That's not going to be how an adult romantic partner loves you. There are conditions in adult romantic love, and people have their own individual lives. They shouldn't sacrifice the same level that parents sacrifice for children. There has to be a boundary. Like, your parent would have to call off work if you were sick to come pick you up from school. If you're sick as an adult, your partner's probably not going to call the day off work. They might like send you soup by DoorDash, but that would be weird if they called off the day to be like sitting with you on the couch watching Maury or whatever we did growing up. Like, you have to, they're still caring for it, but it's not going to look the same as the way your parents cared and the way your parents loved you. It's going to be like a distant cousin, so to speak.
So there's not much that I would add to that other than the route to all of this is self-love. And it's why I talk about it so much on my platform and put so much information for you guys in the captions and all the books that I share with you to be able to help you navigate, you know, moving and shifting from that anxious attachment style and expecting all of these things outside of you to be done for you in some way, shape, or form, and just recognizing that it really just begins with you. It starts inside of you, and there's nothing wrong with you, and that other person that you're thinking about isn't broken, but you can have such a deeper and richer relationship when you start focusing more on yourself and making yourself a priority and taking care of yourself physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and allowing the other person to do the same, because now we're cultivating that interdependent relationship. And you really got to hone in on that word of interdependence and kind of what that means for you. What it means for me is simply you're both yourselves. You go out into the world, you live your life, you go to work, you make your money, you do your thing, you go to the gym, you do all the things, and you come together 12 hours later knowing that neither one of you did anything nefarious in the relationship, and you can still come together and you communicate and you talk and you co-regulate and you build and you co-create together. And that's what a healthy relationship for me would actually look like. And it's using that language of a shared mission and vision. Thank you all for tuning into today's episode of Talia Tuesday on the Blueprint Podcast with Talia Bombola. Remember, building confidence, self-love, and assertiveness is a journey, and each step you take brings you closer to your goals. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast for more insightful conversations and practical tips to support your personal growth, and head over to my Stand store to sign up for the 21-day self-love challenge on sale now. And you can also drop a question for Talia and I for the podcast. Until next time, keep embracing your strengths, asserting your boundaries, and living authentically. Take care, and we'll see you next Tuesday on the Blueprint Podcast.